Oh, hi. I'm Kaylee Moore.
And I'm Paul Jarvis.
And we have helped over 2,300 freelancers in our creative class learn clear and actionable steps to build a long-lasting freelance career they both love and enjoy.
And this is the Creative Class Podcast, a podcast for freelancers by freelancers. Hey, that's us.
Yay!
Hooray.
Hey, let's start the show.
The Creative Class Podcast is sponsored by our friends at Monday.com.
Monday.com is a team management tool that's perfect for freelancers who work together to get projects launched.
You can sign up for a free trial today at monday.com/creativeclass. And Creative Class is all one word, no dashes or spaces. You'll also receive 25% off any paid plan once the trial has expired.
So I think it's important for us to discuss a topic that comes up all the time. And it's the whole conversation around per hour rates and hourly rates versus project-based rates. And how do you get from point A to B, or which is better? There's a lot to discuss when it comes to this conversation. I think a good place to start is you and I both are kind of on the same page about why hourly rates are not such a great idea and why that can be kind of a dangerous, slippery slope. So I'll let you kick that off. I want your perspective to get started on why hourly rates are kind of a bad idea.
Yeah. I love this topic as well. Before we hit record on this, like this is a favorite topic. They're all our favorite topics.
They are.
Yeah. So I don't like hourly for a lot of reasons, but the main reason I don't like hourly is because I feel like it sets a freelancer up for being a technician as opposed to an expert. And why I think that's bad is that I think experts get paid more or have the potential to get paid more, and they get more respect in so much as experts get leaned on for their advice on how to do the work and then to do the work. Technicians get told to do the work. I feel like it's a lot less stressful where you get to have input and a client respects that input for the work you're doing, as opposed to just, hey, you go write me this copy in this way, or hey, you go design me. And like, nobody wants to be called hey, you, first of all. But
right.
Second of all, you don't want to be told how to do your job. And I feel like if you charge by the hour, it leads to that psychologically. The best example I have for this is just this made up story about, say, a client comes to a programmer and says like, hey, I want you to build me this WordPress plugin. Doesn't matter what it is. It's a WordPress plugin for this example. And he could go to two programmers, and the first one, she could be like, I charge $500 an hour. And the client might be, what the hell? That's a lot of money for an hourly rate. And so he goes to the second programmer, and she's like, well, it costs you $500 for me to build this plugin. And he's like, that sounds reasonable. I would pay $500 for this plugin. It's the same price.
It's positioning.
But you're absolutely right. It's positioning. And I think the reason why hourly rates don't really work is because you get punished for being good and efficient at your work. Or what always happens, because all freelancers I talk to do this, they get their work done faster, they just pad their hourly rate anyways. It ends up not even being an hourly rate to begin with. Oh yeah, it took 8 hours to do because I want a bill for 8 hours. It's not that it took you 8 hours of work. You just want a bill for 8 hours because that seems about right, because you're good and fast at what you do. So why bother doing that? You're getting punished. Even like, I've even talked to tattoo artists about this. We're like, as I've been tattooing for like 10 years or 20 years, I go slower than I have to because tattoos are like billed hourly rate in general. Although some tattooers, they're just like, this is my day rate. And I'm like, you're a good freelancer.
That's right. That's
and
true.
I've had some work that I got done. She got it done. And she's like, that only took me 4 hours. I'm like, I got the tattoo I wanted. It's still going to cost a day rate. I'm like, okay. Like, you gave me exactly what I asked you to give me for the rate that we both agreed upon.
Right.
We're good.
I think that kind of sets the stage nicely for talking about how to formulate that value proposition and really thinking about when a client comes to you, they're not paying you essentially for your time. They're paying you for the end product, just like you said. And there's value in the expertise that you have as a specialist who specializes in a specific thing. And this is why it helps to have a niche that you're specialized in. There's value in the expertise that you have and the knowledge that you've worked really hard to build up. That has a dollar value to it as well. So you have to tie that in. Whereas when you do the whole hourly rate thing, that goes right out the window because you're just an hourly worker. You're just somebody there who's filling the time to get the thing done.
Yeah. And if they're hiring you as a freelancer, it's not like we talked about the difference between employees and freelancing. They don't get to say, this is how you do the work and this is how long it's going to take you to do the work. You get to set that. And I think the way that I like to work and the way that we teach it in the course is that you just get to tell the client, this is when you get the work. You don't have to say, I work on Monday from 8 till 3 and Tuesday from 3 till 9. If a client asks me for something, I'm just going to say, I'll do it for this amount of money. You're going to get it on this day.
Right.
It doesn't matter how many hours I worked on. It doesn't matter when I worked on it. I just know that I'm going to get it done for this time. And then I'll buffer that time because sometimes things can take longer or sometimes things might come up. But then you're not just, oh, the client knows this is going to take 8 hours. I've got to start now and I'll finish it in 8 hours from now and hand it off. That would be a really stressful place to be.
It would. It would. And just kind of to build off of what I was talking a little bit about just a second ago, that's where having a niche and a specialization really comes in handy. And when you're thinking about your value proposition and why somebody should hire you, if you have something that you are super specialized in, that helps you be seen as the go-to person for not just the specific type of customer or client, but also for the type of work that you're doing. So for example, if you're a copywriter, rather than just being like, hey, I'm a writer, I can write stuff, you could say something much more specific, like I'm a copywriter that specializes in email sequences for accounting companies or for accounting software. And so you could see how in the client's mind, it's like, oh, you do this one thing and you must be really good at it because you're very specialized. I kind of think of it as if you were going to hire an artist to paint a mural, would you want somebody who calls themselves an artist, or would you want the person who's an acclaimed muralist who's very well known for their work with murals? You want the person who's really good at that specific thing you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, you want Kyle Steed.
Yeah.
He's a very famous mural painter. He did all of MailChimp's offices and a whole bunch of other stuff. And that's what he does, is large scale stuff. Because that's a perfect point, is if I'm a client, if I'm an accounting company looking to write an email sequence, and I have two options. One is a writer and one is a writer who specializes in email sequences for accounting companies. I'm going to hire the one that does exactly the thing that I want. If I want a mural in my office, I want the mural painter. I don't want somebody who specializes in like small acrylic work and 2x2.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by the fine folks at Monday.com. Their software is a central platform for teams to manage every detail of their work, from road mapping to tasks to sharing design or writing assets. Monday.com also integrates with major tools like Slack, Gmail, and Zapier.
They've currently got over 22,000 paying teams, from freelancers to bigger companies like WeWork, Uber, Wix, and even Adidas. Plan out your next client or collab on projects with other freelancers using their visual boards to map out deadlines, share assets for feedback, and plan your workload for each project. You can even use it to track leads for potential projects or follow-ups after a project is complete. You can be more productive because you don't have to train your clients to use their software.
Try it out today for free at monday.com/creativeclass, and creative class is all one word. You'll also receive 25% off any paid plan once the trial expires. So how do you pitch your value to a potential client? You have this going in a call. It's like, why is it like a no-brainer to hire Kaylee as opposed to the other writer who might even do what you do as well?
For me, a lot of it is based within the proposal stage and within the whole process of onboarding or going back and forth with a potential client who's usually a referral anyways. Mm-hmm. But I think that an easy way to, even if you're somebody who's doing hourly pricing right now, an easy way to transition into project-based quoting is to have some documents set up. And this is something we talk about in creative class, having these materials like a proposal or just even documents that are like, hey, this is how I work. That includes these elements of social proof that basically validate that you are really good at what you do and that you're worth the rate that you're charging. So those are things like past results that you've produced for clients, or names and logos of, you know, well-known clients that you've worked with in the past, or testimonials. And then talking about your specific subject matter expertise. So talking about how you are a specialist and you have this very unique set of skills that makes you the ideal person for the job that they're basically trying to hire for. And so for me, having those elements and having those almost templatized documents that I can send over that it's like, hey, I'm really good at this one thing. It makes it hard for the client to say no, almost, because again, it's like the muralist thing. It would be crazy to go with the other generalist instead of this person who's super specialized, who has results that shows that they're very good at what they do. It makes the whole process run so much more smoothly.
Yeah, I used to always try to answer before I would jump on any call with somebody. And it, obviously, like, I had an onboarding process too. So like, I would validate that this is somebody that it seems like it would be a good fit if we worked together. Otherwise, I wouldn't get on a call with them. I would always have like a clear idea in my mind of why they should hire me versus somebody else. And not even I'm the best, because like, I wouldn't want to hire somebody who said I am the best. But just like you said, I would kind of think about like, okay, what similar projects have I done that I can reference? Because people want to see how they fit into your services to mitigate the amount of risk. So mm-hmm. if I'm hiring somebody and I'm an accounting firm, it's less risky if I hire a writer who's done work with accounting firms. And if you haven't done work with accounting firms, you're not screwed at that point. But what else can you lean on? Where can you draw connections that a potential client might not? You could say, I've done email automation sequence writing for these type of clients. And the reason why I can apply that knowledge to your work is because X. And so I would always go into every call thinking about, okay, why me and not somebody else? Or why me and not another freelancer has the exact same skill set? I feel like I was really good at closing sales if I got on the phone with somebody. And I feel that makes me think, oh, I'm the best sales. Like, I'm an awful salesperson. If I had to pitch you on hiring me, it would not go well for me. It would just not go well. But I think why I ended up being able to close almost every, like if I would get on the phone with somebody, I knew that we were probably going to work together. That's just the way that it worked. And the reason why that happened is first, I had an onboarding process where I would never get on the phone with somebody and not know that they had a $100 budget for a $10,000 project.
Right.
That wouldn't happen. And I would also know about their project, like they would fill in a project planner beforehand for kind of the work that they wanted. And I could kind of see what expectations they had. If they had unreasonable expectations, probably wouldn't work with them. Because if I got on the phone with them, I probably wouldn't be able to close that job or that project. In talking to people, I think it's hard for any creative person to pitch themselves. Like, it's just awkward.
It is.
Maybe it's not awkward for somebody. It's really awkward for me to pitch myself. But what I am good at was just listening to kind of what clients were saying and then repeating that back with how my skills could help with that one thing. So if they would say things like, I understand who my audience is, but I don't think my website is really reflecting their taste. Then in talking to them, I would say things like, I could build you a website that could better reflect the taste and the style that your audience has. I would listen to what people were saying and then kind of repeat it back with my skills kind of smushed in there.
Yeah.
And I would always bring it back to how my skills could help their business and how hiring me would be an investment instead of an expense.
That's smart.
Because I would always try to think, I run a business, you run a business. We care about our bottom lines. We want to make money. We're in business. So if I was thinking about that, how could I turn a web design project into something that could hopefully improve their bottom line? Mm-hmm. And obviously, like we've talked about this before, I'm never going to promise anything because that's a recipe for disaster. But I can say what past results are. Mm-hmm. I can say how I think they could be helped with my work. And so I'd always kind of position it. I think a lot of times freelancers get or don't get work based on how they pitch themselves in talking to clients. And I think that's a learnable skill. So I'm the most awkward, weird person in the entire world. But I got that down to really, really good. My success rate for closing projects after a while was really good. And I'm an awkward, weird person, even on calls where there's money involved. But still, like listening and noticing kind of what they were saying and why they were saying it, people don't hire a writer because, for the most part, they don't hire a writer because they think, I wish my copy was just 10% better for the sake of being better.
Right.
It's just like, I want my website to look good because I just want it to look good. they want their website copy to read better because they want more sales, or they want more customers, or they want more retention. Same with their website. Like, there's a business reason they want to hire you. If you can learn what that is and then talk to that point, I just think that's a good idea. Me talking about CSS and JavaScript to a client, like, I would never bring up words like that to a client. They don't care.
No, they don't.
They just want to know how my skill is going to help them. You're not going to talk about adverbs and verbs and sentence structure. You're just going to talk about how your writing is going to help them.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was just teaching a resume workshop last night and I was talking about that exact thing, because that's a copywriting tactic, is to basically mirror your audience's language back to them. Literally, you're parroting what they said because that's what they want to hear. Use the words that they're giving you and leverage that in your favor. And again, talk about the results that you can produce for them and talk about the skills that you have that are going to help them get from where they are right now to where they want to be. And if you don't have that language, if you're not sure quite yet, if you haven't had the chance to like have a back and forth with a client, go to their website, see what kind of language they're using right now. Look at their mission statement or their values or their about page to kind of figure out what it is that they're trying to be as a company or even as an individual. That's a great starting place to kind of start formulating your plan for how you're going to speak to the client and position yourself.
I think Finish.
No, you go.
Okay, I was just going to say, if they're hiring you, they're looking for a specific outcome. So you got to learn that.
Right.
Continue. That was just my little interjection.
Well, I think the flip side of all of this is that not every client, even if you do the best job in the world, is going to be a yes. And they still might try to like lowball or, you know, pay you less than what you're asking for. And I think in those situations, it really is okay to pass on those opportunities and to say no, which feels hard and feels really scary because money is nice and opportunity is nice to have. But those clients that don't want to pay you what you're asking for, that's kind of a red flag. Even if you think you're doing a good job of communicating it, they're not seeing the value in the equation here. And so it's okay to say no in those situations and let the opportunity pass.
Yeah, I totally agree, because I think a lot of times, if clients don't respect the price for your services, they're probably not going to respect other aspects of the work that you do. It's probably going to end up there.
Most likely.
All right. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
No.
Good. Hope you enjoyed listening to this. Hey, friends. Thanks for listening to the Creative Class Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a rating or review over on iTunes, and be sure to subscribe too.
And if you like this podcast, you'll also like our online course, The Creative Class, and you can find out more at creativeclass.co.
See you next time.